Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. In the next second half hour of the show, we're going to be talking about foster care in America with the author of the book, To the End of June. But first, a new groundbreaking study about prostate cancer published in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine, also noted today in the New York Times. Dr. Ian Thompson from the UT Health Science Center joins us to talk about this, your published paper here. So you're saying that long-term survival of participants in the prostate cancer prevention trial and something about a baldness drug. That what caught my eye was the baldness drug. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, I was telling some colleagues of mine that a number of years ago, I learned that when we published the first report that we made Jay Leno's monologue. I guess that's more important than making whatever, but it's the same drug. It's a drug that's used for prostate enlargement symptoms as well as for treating male pattern baldness. It's a generic drug called finasteride.
And so if people take this drug, it also somehow mitigates the chances of getting full-blown prostate cancer? Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, it's one of the very first designer drugs that I'm aware of. It was based on a series of observations among a group of people who were born with a change in the way that this enzyme, it's an enzyme that converts testosterone to a stronger hormone that's present in the scalp and in the prostate, where it causes male pattern baldness and prostate enlargement. And the observation was made that if you have this defect in this enzyme, you don't get prostate enlargement or prostate cancer. And the drug was developed, and it was used for a number of years for prostate enlargement. And as the PSA testing, if you will, began in the United States and this epidemic of prostate cancer developed, the National Cancer Institute's Division of Cancer Prevention said, oh my goodness, can we do something to try to reduce the risk of prostate cancer? This drug was developed, and the trial was begun.
So if I look at somebody, they've got that male pattern baldness going on, like George Costanza, you know, and you say, can you just eyeball him and say, you know, you need to look out for prostate cancer?
No, generally not. But what the problem is in this country is that we're pretty confident that PSA testing reduces the risk of death from prostate cancer. But in the process of finding the cancers that cause problems, the aggressive prostate cancers, we find these slow-growing tumors. And it's not unique to prostate cancer. We had a discussion a little while ago about the overdetection of other cancers, but it's a greater problem in prostate cancer. And if you're found to have these slow-growing cancers, has a profound impact. Whether you treat it and run the risk of the side effects, or if you don't and watch it, there's still substantial anxiety. And what this long-term study now shows, we're now more than 20 years since we started that study. What it shows is that you maintain the same impact of PSA testing, but you find about half the number of these slow-growing tumors. So you take off the table as many as 70,000 prostate cancers per year that you really don't help by finding, and continue to focus on the detection of the aggressive cancers. So you get, if you will, instead of using a shotgun to deal with something, you're much more precise identifying the disease that needs to be found.
Our phone lines are open, and the number is 614-8980. We're talking with Dr. Ian Thompson about prostate cancer. He has a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine about long-term survival of participants in the prostate cancer prevention trial. I did have an email question that I want to bring up. My husband, age 55, went to the doctor who felt bumps on his prostate during a digital exam. But the PSA was normal. The doctor wants to do a biopsy. My husband is resistant. He thinks all prostate treatment has such serious risk for urinary and erectile issues that he does not want to consider assessment or treatment at all. So what should...
That's an excellent question. In fact, you see it all the time. And it's one of these, as we talked about previously, it's one of these, what you really want to do in the process of detecting cancer is you want to biopsy the person who has a greater likelihood of having aggressive cancer than a slow-growing cancer. And you want to focus the treatment on those people who will benefit and by the same time, consider prevention as well. So for a person with a bump on the prostate, now there's no such thing as a normal PSA. You can have prostate cancer at every level. But one thing that we encourage physicians to do is to Google prostate cancer risk calculator. It was one of the outcomes of this 20-year study, which allowed us to calculate a man's risk of prostate cancer. So let's say you have a 55-year-old man who has a bump on the prostate and they get a PSA and it's 0.5. And he's Caucasian, no family history of the disease, or he's Hispanic, no family history of the disease. His risk of prostate cancer is about 18% if you do a biopsy. But his risk of an aggressive prostate cancer is 1%. So if you do a biopsy in that particular person, there's about a 1 in 100 chance that you'll help him. On the other hand, there's about a 17-fold greater likelihood of finding one of these slow-growing tumors. So my conversation with folks like this is, you know, there's never a risk that's 0 or 100%. But in this particular circumstance with very low levels of PSA, the likelihood of helping somebody by doing a biopsy is not very great. The likelihood of finding one of these slow-growing tumors is many, many times greater. Then you have an intelligent conversation, say, what would you like to do? And one of those things is potentially examine it maybe another 6 months or another year.
Just keep an eye on it. But a biopsy, how complicated, what's involved in a biopsy?
So prostate biopsy takes in our hands maybe around 5 minutes or so. You take some antibiotics the day before. And the day of or so, and you stop any blood thinners to reduce the risk of bleeding, and a little probe, an ultrasound probe, goes in the bottom, and it looks at the prostate predominantly to direct where the needle's going to go. You numb up the prostate with some numbing medicine like the dentist uses, and there's an automated little needle that goes pop, 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 takes some tissue out. It's uncomfortable, but it's an outpatient procedure. Like I said, it takes about 5 minutes, and the day or two later, you get the results. The principal issues with the biopsy, while it's not obviously, in fact, we're in the process of working on discovering a way to do a biopsy with a urine test.
That would be awesome.
That be awesome. There's 1.5 million biopsies done in the United States each year. And our colleagues at the South Texas Research Facility at the Health Science Center at the CTRC, we're working on that. So that's the next generation. But the real problem with the biopsy, there's about a 1% or 2% risk of an infection. Even taking antibiotics. But the problem with the biopsy, it's uncomfortable, it's expensive. But the real problem with the biopsy is that the risk of finding these slow-growing tumors. That's the real problem from it. And then that leads to the anxiety and the treatment, no treatment, and so forth. And that's the purpose of cancer prevention, is to try to take those off the table.
But a biopsy itself doesn't cause things like urinary and erectile dysfunction and stuff?
Well, anything is possible. You never say never. And there are some people that may have some problems with erections afterwards. It's unusual. It's extremely unusual, but it's possible. And somebody who has prostate enlargement and they're barely able to urinate, you do a biopsy on the prostate, you might, the extra straw that broke the camel's back, they might not be able to void afterwards. So it's a non-trivial thing. There are some risks with it, but it's pretty straightforward. But again, the real problem is this potential detection of a tumor that really doesn't help the gentleman.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. So you've said this is an ongoing study. You had a study whose results published in 2003. So is this new study, what, the sequel?
No, it's the same group of people. In fact, the interesting thing, it has a huge San Antonio connection. There were almost 19,000 men around the United States. And in San Antonio, 2,000 men participated in the study. San Antonio men established the management of prostate cancer for the world for generations to come. In fact, there are probably people listening right now that were on the study. What the study did is it began in 1993. We enrolled men. They first started taking the medication in 1994. And now we followed these folks out to 2011 was when we actually closed the books and looked at how these men were doing.
So when you start a study like this, which is such a long-running study, do you know where you're going with it, or can there be adaptations to the study as you go along because you realize, that's interesting, let's check this out?
Yeah, well, that's basically the purpose of this paper, is that when we published the results, there was a 25% reduction in risk, but there were more of these aggressive tumors. And we said, oh my goodness. Now, the numbers were small, but of concern. We said, oh my goodness, could it have an impact on survival? And so with further follow-up, two big things. Number one, the survival was the same. So the impact of screening you get if you're on the drug is the same. But more interestingly than that is that with further follow-up, what we found is that the risk reduction was no longer 25%. The risk reduction was actually 30%, a huge number.
All right, I'm going to get Jim on the line. Jim's a caller. Welcome to The Source, Jim.
Thank you. I'm a former patient of Dr. Thompson's. I called in the last time he was on, so he'll probably get kind of tired of me. But I had surgery back in 2001, have had great results. What I wanted to ask Dr. Thompson was his paper in 2003 seemed to show that finasteride resulted in more high-grade tumors. And I wondered if this new paper, which I haven't seen yet, kind of counterbalances that or what the long-term yes. findings were related to high-grade tumors.
Yes, very, very, very good question. So two observations. Number one, there were more high-grade tumors. It was statistically significant in the first paper.
Yes.
It's no longer statistically significant in the further follow-up.
Okay, excellent.
But the real, as we found in the meantime, was that the drug actually helps find those tumors, and that is then confirmed by the observation that there's no reduction in risk of death from the survival's the same. So thank you for that question.
All right. Thank you.
And we did get another listener question online. It says, when will urine test be tested and can people locally be part of the study?
Boy, we're working on that currently. Dr. Tim Wan, who is the deputy director of the CTRC, has a team of scientists who are working with him on that even as we speak. It's going to take some time, but the initial results are extremely encouraging. And we're hot on the trail. And it's, you know, this is the purpose of these scientific investigations like this in these clinical trials is to maintain the reduction in risk of death while reducing the burden. And so if we can prevent some of these cancers and we can take biopsies and then change them to urine tests and each step along the way, we just make life better.
And are doctors out there, the doctors who are treating people, are they getting this information that they need to be aware not all the problems with the prostate need to be treated like it's a death sentence?
Yes, and that's an outstanding question. One of our responsibilities as physicians is that it's complex. I mean, the results of this study, we're talking for a little bit here today. We could talk for an hour and a half, 2 hours on the results. The results are complex, and the challenge is that the physicians have to be the consumer reports for the patients. So they're the ones who have to be able to talk to the patients about this. So we as physicians, just like with everything else, cholesterol-lowering medications, aspirin, fish oil, and so forth, we have to be spun up on the information so we can tell the patients.
Dr. Ian Thompson from the UT Health Science Center, a report in the New England Journal of Medicine. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.